Yeah, isn't it fun?
Oops, sorry.
Okay, welcome everyone. It's 5:30, and I'd like to call to order the Champaign County Mental Health Board. We've got a thick packet and a pretty full agenda for today. So, Stephanie, if you could please do the roll call.
Tom Moore.
Here.
Judy O'Connor.
Here.
Joe Omoasagie. Elaine Palencia. Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Ann Robin.
Here.
Margaret White.
Here.
Susan Fowler.
Here.
Okay. We have a few minutes for citizen input, public participation, and would like to check and see if there is any for this evening. Okay, great. Tracy, we ask that you spend 5 minutes or less. Thank you.
It will definitely be less. So, good evening, Board. I just wanted to come tonight. I know you have a full agenda. So, I'm Tracy Parsons. I am a facilitator of the Community Coalition. And the Board has really been very instrumental in a number of initiatives that we have underway through the coalition and in the community. And so September 30th will be the end of our planning year for our CU Fresh Start initiative. And as you all are aware, the board was instrumental in helping us have part of our seed money to help get our community part of our initiative together. We were able to secure $127,000 in additional money, partly because we had the Mental Health Board funds to match and support our project. So we're going to have tremendous data around our initiative this year with police. We've done some community surveying. We've had some real-life experiences with those involved in our gun violence issue on our community. This is nothing to boast about, but our numbers are down significantly this year. We've had 63 shooting incidents to date, year to date. This time last year, we had 77, and the year before was 87. So far too many still. Our work is still in front of us, but I just wanted to thank the board and let you know that we're making tremendous progress, and look forward to, we'll go public with all our data information late October, early November. So hopefully before the end of the year, we can find some time on your agenda to come back and give you a more detailed presentation.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Any other public participation, citizen input? And it's always great to hear that agencies are able to leverage Mental Health Board funds. So thank you for reiterating that. Next item is approval of the agenda. Is the agenda so moved? Okay. And okay, second by Elaine. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor? Aye. Great. Comments, I'm not really going to make very many comments this evening because we've got a full agenda. It's good to be back. We had a month off, and we've got quite a bit of planning ahead of us this fall, including a study session next week that I'd like to remind the board members of, and there'll be information distributed before the end of today's session for next week. We have a few handouts. Finally, the approved annual report from 2016.
Yes,
2016 is here for your safeguarding, I guess. We also have a copy for every member of the board of an abbreviated Robert's Rules of Order, since we had a little bit of difficulty earlier in the year remembering to follow procedure. So it's a way to update and refamiliarize yourself with it. And there's another handout as well.
And that goes with our presentation.
That will go with a presentation on the Justice and Mental Health Collaboration Program. I'd also like to thank the staff for a very thorough set of materials for today. And am hoping that for some of the longer materials, such as the Evaluation Capacity Project, that the presentation will provide us with a nice, succinct summary of the progress. It was great to have 90 pages, but it was a lot to read through, too. So with that, why don't we move to new business? And new business will involve starting with the UIUC evaluation report.
There you go. Good evening. Thank you for inviting us to report to you on our work building evaluation capacity in the board and in the funded agencies. My name is Mark Aber. I am the co-director with Nicole Allen of this project. We're both professors at the University of Illinois in the psychology department. And I am going to try to provide you an overview of the progress that we made this year. I apologize for the long materials. Most of them were appendices and such, but I understand that there was a lot there. So the purpose of our work in this second year of the project was to implement the plans that we developed in the first year to build evaluation capacity in funded programs. And just to remind you, evaluation capacity refers to the process of improving an organization's ability to use evaluation to learn from its work and improve results. And this can be done in a variety of ways, including building knowledge and skills in members in organizations, building buy-in and an evaluation culture, building resources, both human and material, and strengthening information-related organizational operations. This is the primary way that most of the organizations that we worked with were interested in building their capacity, and then finally building supportive networks. So in our second year, we had seven primary activities that we engaged in. I'm not going to read each of these here because I'm going to review them each in turn, but this is a set of activities that reflect the prior strategies for building evaluation capacity. I forgot to delete the. I've reordered them. That tells a little better story than what was in the report. So I'll approach them in this order. The first of which is we work to encourage and support the development of theory of change logic models in funded programs. The goal here was to help programs connect program activities to both long and short-term outcomes. And we were originally planning to hold 2 to 3 of these workshops. Interest was high enough, and we had sufficient resources to do more because, as I'll mention later, our consultation bank idea did not come to fruition in the same way that we expected it to. So we offered 8 different logic model workshops, and we held 6 of them. 2 of them were not, we didn't have adequate attendance. But as you can see here, 17 different programs, funded programs, participated in the theory of change logic modeling workshop. So the goal here, again, is to connect what the programs are doing to what the outcomes are that they expect. This sounds like a simple matter. It turns out to be a real challenge for programs of all types, not just the funded programs of the Mental Health Board. And it turned out to be a very valuable activity for most of the programs. Most of them really appreciated that activity. and are using those logic models as they move forward. The second area of activity that we were engaged in was to provide, and this was really the lion's share of the work we did, to provide targeted evaluation support to four identified programs. We identified four programs from the 10 that volunteered with the guidance and support of the Mental Health Board staff, and we worked intensively with them over the period of 9 or 10 months, depending on the program, to help them identify both what they wanted to try to do in the way of building evaluation capacity and in terms of what they could reasonably expect to pull off. And the four programs that were chosen were Community Choices Connect Program, the Family Services Senior Advocacy Program, Promise Healthcare's Wellness and Justice Program, and Rosecrans's Community, or CJ 708 Program. And for each of these programs, we engaged in individualized consultation. We had a group of graduate students, four doctoral students, who worked directly, each one directly with the program, and we met weekly to review that work as a team, Dr. Allen and I, in support of those graduate students. And really what the work entailed was moving from the logic models that they developed to implementing, first choosing and then implementing measures to tap into key aspects of their process and outcomes that they were interested in measuring. The third area of activity that we engaged in was to create a learning organization among funded agencies and the Mental Health Board itself. And the goal here was to begin the process of trying to foster a culture of valuing evaluation, desiring evaluation to be meaningful, and experimenting with evaluation. Evaluation is a scary thing to most organizations. They view it as, you know, somebody looking over their shoulder and preparing to scold them or monitor them. And so we're trying to build in a culture that is proactive and that values what can be learned from evaluation to improve the activities of the organization. Now, we did this primarily in two ways. One is through the logic modeling workshops that I just mentioned. And the second way was to support the four targeted programs who we spent most time with to present to their peers at a mental health agency council meeting about their experiences over the course of the year building evaluation capacity, both the challenges that they faced, the lessons they learned, the successes they had, and, you know, sort of describing the general process that they were involved in. This turned out, I think, to be a fairly informative activity for the rest of the agencies who attended that meeting. It led to a number of agencies speaking up at that end of that meeting to hope to be chosen as one of the next four programs that we'll work with in the coming year. And this is something, you know, this is the first step on a what could be a long process if the board wants to commit to this, of trying to build an evaluation culture that says we care about data, we want to use data to inform what we're doing and trying to improve what we're doing, and not using it as a stick, but rather as a carrot for improvement. The fourth area was to create or use existing settings for organizations to share lessons learned from the evaluation activities. And again, this is something that we think could expand beyond the Mental Health Agency Council meeting to other collaborations and other settings where organizations share information with each other. But the primary way we did it this time around was through the Mental Health Agency Council meeting. Fifth, we worked to create an evaluation consultation bank. The idea here was to be able to provide limited, time-limited consultation to programs about specific evaluation needs, rather than engage with organizations in a long-term relationship over the course of many months, instead to provide, you know, a day's worth or multiple hours worth of consultation that might help them do things like identify high-quality measures to measure specific outcomes, revise and strengthen existing surveys, and other types of activities that would be more manageable in terms of time. And we found that this opportunity was underutilized by programs, despite our efforts to both make it well known through email attempts and through discussion at meetings. And we think this probably has to do with the relatively early level of development that most of the programs are at in terms of their own evaluation thinking and the strategies they already have in place, that they weren't in a good position to take advantage of an unstructured resource like this one. So we're imagining that we will, or we're planning, to offer this resource, the Consultation Bank, to continue work with the four programs that we worked with last year, as so that they can continue to build on the progress they made when we were working with them intensively, and then also to, instead of just this free-for-all consultation opportunity, design more structured opportunities for evaluation-related activities for the other programs, things like possibly how to build a useful data set, you know, using a program like Excel or something like that. So, you know, helping them think about how to design evaluation questions, these kinds of activities that we could do in a workshop format. The sixth area of activity that we engaged in was working to create more uniform performance outcome format. You all are familiar with the performance outcome measures and the expectations that you set for programs. We have been working. The goal here is to clarify and strengthen those reporting mechanisms from funded programs and to provide the mental health board staff and board members with more useful information. We have reviewed information from interviews with board members about their experience trying to use the performance outcome measures as a way to understand what the programs are doing. We reviewed submitted applications and performance measurement outcome documents from multiple programs. We engaged in the activity ourselves, trying to think through where is it ambiguous, where could it be clarified in certain ways, and we're in the process now of editing those documents for piloting in the next application cycle. We'll be meeting with the Mental Health Board staff next week, I believe, on Tuesday, to review some of the changes that we're proposing. And then finally, the seventh area that we spent time working on was building a what we call a buffet of evaluation tools. This is an online resource. It's a Google Drive currently. It could be in different kinds of electronic formats. But the idea here is to encourage and facilitate programs to use evidence-based and empirically validated outcome tools by making them easily accessible to them and helping them it's a searchable database that has tools to measure all sorts of outcomes that might be of interest to mental health-related programs. These are research-supported tools, and some of them programs in our community have developed for themselves. So currently there are over 50 measures that are there. That will continue to grow over the course of the next year, probably double or triple by the time this next year is over. So real quickly, lessons learned. Mental health board-funded programs have a variety of challenges with respect to building evaluation capacity, most of which I'm sure you're well aware. It's easy to say, but hard to reckon with the limited time and resources that programs have to invest in this kind of activity. Few, if any, programs have dedicated resources for evaluation. They're not funded to do this for the most part, and they are not prepared to do it, even though they try and they're interested. There is limited in-agency evaluation knowledge and skills that is hard to build up. There is staff turnover that undercuts building up that knowledge and skills. And there are pre-existing data management systems in some of the larger organizations that are required for state reporting purposes that are inflexible and that make the use of the data that they have quite cumbersome and difficult. We ran into all of those problems as we worked to consult with the programs and build capacity. Often there are multiple competing information demands from the programs that come from multiple funders. So these are the kinds of things that we're working against when we're trying to build evaluation capacity. Given these challenges, I think it's fair to say that it is not reasonable to expect relatively small service organizations to design and implement high-quality outcome-oriented evaluations without either consultation of the kind that we provided this year, from dedicated evaluation experts, or more concerted evaluation resources like those your board devotes to the PLL evaluation. Despite these challenges, with the consultation support we provided this past year, programs were able to make important and sustainable changes and to strengthen their capacity to evaluate and target improvements, primarily by getting clear about the relationship between what they're doing and the outcomes they're trying to affect, by thinking about how to measure both the process and the outcomes that they care about, and by trying to think through the logistics of implementing that kind of measurement in the daily processes and protocols of their workplaces. Those are non-trivial changes to make in organizations, especially organizations that are so focused on doing good work for improving mental health. They have the demands to meet a single individual's needs above and beyond the 50 or 100 that they're already meeting is much more clearly focused in their minds than doing stuff like evaluation. So, this kind of consultation provides them a new opportunity to think about how to do that. And then I'd finally like to say that the types of evaluation the programs can engage in themselves are going to be more likely to be process and internal quality improvement types of evaluation activities. These are activities that we do believe that with the kinds of supports we're providing this past year, and we will continue to provide to four new programs next year, that we can expect funded programs to do relatively independently and with modest supports. So that's all I have for you today, and I'm happy to entertain questions.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Yes, thank you. I had a question about the online repository. After your project is done, is that going to be maintained in some way? What happens to that?
It can be maintained. We will maintain it for as long as we're at the University of Illinois, if that is interest in doing that. It's really pretty simple. It's on a Google Drive. Any agency could pick it up and host it. And it's the kind of resource that can be shared by simply sharing a link to that mm-hmm. Google Drive. So it's it takes very little to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
What will take devoted effort is to continue to grow it.
Yes, that's really where my question is coming from.
And for that, what we're going to encourage is that the programs who are revising and editing and improving their own outcome measures and their own process-related measures, that they will upload them to that drive. So it'll grow more slowly than it is now. We're able, we have access to the research literature, and we're knee-deep in it all the time. So it's easy for us to upload measures as we come across them and as we see need for them in funded programs. But beyond that kind of activity, the programs themselves can upload their own to share with others.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Tom?
Say, Dr. Haber, after reading this and then hearing you describe it, what I'm mostly impressed with, because I know the challenges that agencies have had in trying to do evaluations, it's not that they haven't, it's just that they haven't always had the kind of resources that you provided them with. And the two that seem to be absolutely essential and have moved this project along is, one, the consultation that you were able to provide for them to give them another way to think about it, and the fact that there are other tools with about 48 different measures that you have included. And generally, what we get in programs when people are measuring their client satisfaction, and for them to be able to have now access to a whole variety of measures clearly moves them ahead, much further ahead than what they would have been able to do on their own. And I think you've added a valuable service, not just to the agencies, but also to us, by adding those two elements to how you do evaluations of these kinds of programs. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I had one, and sure. I did, in fact, read the entire report. I was really interested in, I want to make sure that I'm sticking to the report, in the Rosecrans Criminal Justice 708 program that focused on individualized case management, and really looking at the success of referrals and whether or not that increased the stability of the individuals who were leaving incarceration or during incarceration, and just wondered, maybe this is more of a Rosecrans question than it is an evaluation consultation question, but how much of that has been implemented? Obviously, it was designed in this past year, but how's the process going?
So it has not been implemented yet.
Okay.
The intention is to implement it in the coming year.
Okay, great. Well, that's very helpful to kind of understand the timeline.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment that I think I'm kind of proud of the fact that what we have here is a community of this is a remarkable thing for a community to do. It's amazingly unusual. And what we're doing here is building a culture, which is really a part of an infrastructure of human service agencies in which we're not talking about people punishing one another, but we're talking about people encouraging one another. And we're making the fact that we're making such good use of the natural resources that are in our community, taking advantage of the fact that we have a major university here and we're actually working with community agencies in ways to strengthen local agencies, I think we should be proud of the whole thing. So that's my comment.
As always, thank you, Jillian. Very well stated. and I would echo it, as I can see many of the board members nodding their agreement. So it was something that came out of discussions 3 years ago, as I recall, that the need for some evaluation. And this will be year three. So great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. The next item for new business is the Crisis Response Planning Committee report. Also extremely interesting material.
Hi, I'm Bruce Barnard, the very part-time project director for the Justice and Mental Health Collaboration Program, and we are very pleased to be here to submit some of the recommendations that have come out of the final report. Celeste Blodgett is here, who did the lion's share of the work, and Claudia Linhoff, who chaired the Crisis Response Planning Committee and served as what we called the collaboration consultant. I see Jim McGuire came in. Jim was a member of the committee, as was Mark. And Captain Bogus was also on the committee. Who else did I miss? Gail Rainey. And Sheila. This was a Department of Justice award under a planned program for communities to coordinate the relationship between the criminal justice system and behavioral health providers. You provided the match for the funding. The awardee was the county. It was for a 24-month project period from October through September 2017. We have applied for an extension to complete some of the work. Doing these presentations to present the findings is one of those things, and continuing to work on the jail screening system, which we developed during this planning process, which we're very proud of, that I'll be talking about a little bit more later on. And very importantly, to present the findings to the public, because we gathered a lot of information from the public and told them at that time that we would be coming back to present what we had found and what the recommendations were. We received some very high-quality technical assistance from the Council of State Governments. They put us in touch with counties that were similarly situated to ours and were facing similar challenges to talk about what they had done, how they had enacted it. what the response was. That was an invaluable part of the process. The grant supports collaborative approaches. Big part of what we did was establish the Crisis Response Planning Committee, which had representation from a variety of stakeholder groups, including a citizen representative, law enforcement, including CIT officers, people throughout the community, providers, advocates who were concerned about mental illness and substance use issues. So it was a very representative group of the interest in the community in this initiative. The project was jointly administered by the Sheriff's Office, Chief Alan Jones, and by Rosecrans, Sheila Ferguson, Executive Director. So as I said before, we convened a Crisis Response Planning Committee, which met monthly throughout the process, but we also had a variety of subcommittees that met on particular topics. We assessed the current system and identified gaps through the use of focus groups. For example, we did a focus group with inmates at the county jail to get their perceptions on the access to services and what they would need upon their release. We conducted specialized public input forums to give the public an opportunity to tell us what their concerns were. These things are all summarized in your report. You got the full report as part of your packet. So you can see in summary form the input that we got from the public, the input that we got from the focus groups. We did a public online survey. The lion's share of what we did is called a sequential intercept map. And that is the process of looking through points in time when there is an opportunity to intervene with someone with mental illness or substance use and enable them to access treatment or diversion or something other than incarceration. We then also look at the jail in terms of our ability to identify people in the jail and connect them to available services, and it goes all the way through reentry from incarceration. So that sequential intercept mapping process was detailed. It was lengthy, but I will say that there was a number of positive outcomes that came out of that just by having the people in the room to talk to each other. I was in all of them, and you know, there were a number of times when somebody would say, you know what, we can solve that problem right now, see me after the meeting. So I think just having the opportunity to have those discussions around a very focused point in how our community is responding was really important. We established common definitions, and those definitions are in your report, in order to measure prevalence rate and system-wide outcomes. We established validated screenings in the jail at booking. That was not something that our technical assistance providers thought that we would be able to accomplish during the planning phase, but we were able to do that because the will was there, both at the jail and with the committee, to make that happen, and that's going to be a really critical part for us going forward. And we conducted a data-driven systems analysis. And I would really encourage you to look at the part of your report where we go through the sequential intercept map and talk about what resources are available at each one of those intercepts. But then we mapped the data that we have available at this point to those intercepts. So there's specific information there about how many bookings there are in the jail, and what we know so far from our screening process about what the likelihood is, the percentage of those people who would benefit from mental health or substance use. Sorry, I'm trying to kind of get over a cold, so, or substance use treatment. So the work is based on four key measures. One, to reduce the number of persons with mental illness or co-occurring disorders who are booked into the jail. Two, to reduce the length of stay for those with mental illness or co-occurring disorders who are in the jail. Three, increase the connection to community resources. And four, to reduce the rate of recidivism. So when I go through these recommendations, I'm going to point out to you which of those measures we believe would be affected by the recommendation of the CRPC. And Claudia, feel free to jump in whenever you...
Can I just say something?
Sure.
I know that y'all have gotten the report, and maybe you've read it, maybe you haven't, but you have access to it. But in case there are people who are, you know, who end up watching this and maybe don't look at the report, I just wanted to emphasize a couple things. One is that, again, this is a planning grant. So our task was to look at the situation and to look at what was needed in order to figure out what our community needs in order to address the goals. I think earlier on in the process, some folks may have had the impression that this was a grant to do the thing, whatever the thing was. That's not what this grant was for. This is for planning, and part of the planning was figuring out, well, what do we need to know? And I think, you know, in the community, you know, broadly speaking, a lot of times we make assumptions about who's in jail and why they're in jail and how that relates to mental health issues, but we didn't actually know. And so a lot of what took up our time was actually, you know, figuring out some of those things and starting to implement some of the ways that we would be able to start getting a handle on what the situation is. And Bruce is going to talk about the recommendations that we ended up, you know, coming up with, but I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that this was not an implementation grant, but a planning grant. So thank you.
And there's an implementation grant pending, which we hope to hear about very soon. So our recommendations, we have a couple of system-wide recommendations. And the first is to establish a permanent behavioral health and justice coordinating council, which would be similar to the crisis response planning committee. It would have representation from various stakeholder groups. It would have, for example, we have a drug court steering committee. We have a crisis intervention team steering committee to oversee the crisis intervention team's law enforcement response. We have a reentry council that talks about reentry from incarceration. And we felt that those could be brought as representatives from each one to this overall group that would be focused on the continued work of monitoring our system performance using the data outcomes that we have, continuing to build that infrastructure and make recommendations to how to continue to make progress on these goals. So that was our first recommendation. The second recommendation is to identify data sharing protocols and continue to develop data infrastructure and capability. We have gone a long ways on that in terms of the data that we've collected, but in order to really assess the system throughout that sequential intercept model, we really need to make sure that we're using common data definitions and that we have the ability to bring data in to meaningfully look at how the system is performing at each one of those intercepts. So it would monitor multi-system performance and capacity, track the needs, evaluate program effectiveness, determine the level of need and current capacity for diversion options for law enforcement, assess the need, potential capacity, and budget required for an assessment center, which there's been a lot of discussion about. But at the point where we ended our work, we did not feel like we had the data to make a recommendation based on needs to go forward with that, and to formalize effective collaboration efforts currently underway by developing policies, procedures, and staff training programs. I want to say a little bit about that. There have been a lot of really, really good things happening in this county around this issue. Good cooperation between the primary players, the state's attorney, defense counsel, the jail staff, Captain Vogas, the behavioral health providers. But one of the things we talked about, and this came up at almost every intercept, that much of what was happening that really seemed to be effective was happening informally and was happening because of existing relationships. And the committee really felt that to continue to make progress, we needed to formalize those things. And we needed to make sure that they were stated as policies by the various entities, that there was training in place so that new people coming in would understand what those things were, what was happening. And so that becomes a system-wide recommendation. Now we're going to talk about the ones that relate to those key measures. So enhance initial law enforcement response by establishing a co-responder or similar approach that encourages the collaboration between behavioral health providers and law enforcement on the scene. There's a lot of exciting things happening across the country with that in terms of using technology and different models. So we didn't want to be specific as to what model would work, but we felt like that was something that this community needed to be taking a look at right now. Maintain and refine the jail screening process. We're using evidence-based screenings for mental health and substance use that are conducted at booking, and that allows us to know, based on that evidence-based tool, what percentage of the people being booked in the jail are indicated as having a mental health or substance use disorder, and then to refer those folks for additional screening or assessments by the providers who are housed in the jail, and ultimately to track how many were screened, how many received an assessment, how many were linked to services. Because if you think about it, that's really what we're looking at. So that would be goals 2 and 3, or measures 2 and 3. Implement a risk needs responsivity screening similar to the LSIR, which is what probation is using now, to measure risk of recidivism, and also to use that in order to help us prioritize people for receiving case management or clinical services based on their risk of recidivism. Probation is doing it for the most part, but anyone who is booked and released or anyone who is incarcerated for a period of time but then not charged is not receiving that at this time. So that's something we would like to see happen as early as possible so that that information, that data is available. And actually that recommendation is also in the report you received from the outcome group. So ensure adequate resources and facilities for community behavioral health providers working in the jail. We have a number of, and you fund, a number of community health providers working in the jail. Claudia has staff in the jail who are doing enrollment assistance for health, medical care. It's a really critical function for what we are doing, and the facilities are just simply not adequate. Just case in point, I mentioned that we did a focus group in the jail. We did the focus group in the jail in the classroom with inmates who had volunteered to talk to us. We didn't find out until afterwards that in order to do that, they rescheduled an MRT group that was supposed to be using that same space at the same time. Claudia's benefit enrollment person meets with clients, inmates in the hallway because there's no private space. So ensure adequate resources and facilities for those services to be provided in the jail. Provide case management and behavioral health support to the public defender's office. This came out of one of the sequential mapping. The public defender is very interested in having someone who can help them in terms of helping the people to access services, to be linked. And so that's something that we felt was important. Both of those we think will have an impact on measures 2, 3, and 4. And then enhanced specialized reentry services for the population with mental illness or co-occurring disorders. That is the reentry, the reducing recidivism. That is the subject of a Second Chance Act grant, which is currently being considered, so we should know on that fairly soon. That's our recommendations. Claudia, what'd I miss?
So much. No, I'm just kidding. You did a great job. Just a couple things that I wanted, you know, that I wanted to mention is earlier Dr. Rappaport spoke beautifully about the program evaluation work, and so much of what you had to say actually made me think about this work and how actually rare it is to bring so many different entities and agencies and organizations together. And it does take a lot of work. I've been working at Champaign County Healthcare Consumers for 20 years now, and we've done that in this community to create new resources and services, and it took exactly this kind of work. And it's difficult, but very important. And you know, we're making progress. But I think it's also important to emphasize, you know, we're applying for grants. We hope to continue this work. Our county is actually, believe it or not, a lot of people may find it hard to believe because frequently when you live in the same community, you don't necessarily have that perspective. But our county is actually on the leading edge of many communities. What we're doing in this community is being studied by other communities and those providing technical assistance, seeking to help other communities. So we're doing something important and special here that I think we can build on. But one of the things that I think is important for the community at large to understand is that as we're applying for, you know, for grants, ultimately the ability to sustain and maintain something like this really comes down to the community level. And we'll do what we can to take best advantage of funds that are available. But ultimately, hopefully, if this is serving the community well, and I do think it is, I think working on these issues helps do a lot to address issues earlier on and prevent them from getting much worse and much more costly and, you know, and lives harmed in much bigger ways. So I just wanted to comment about the collaboration and say that I'm actually, you know, really impressed and proud of that. And we appreciate the leadership from everybody involved. And then I don't know, would this be an appropriate time to talk about this? One of the other things that I just wanted to mention in terms of things that our county is doing to reduce incarceration, we actually have, you know, some things that are already in the works that many community members may not be aware of, but that are important. We do have a drug court, and, you know, that helps to reduce incarceration. And we also, as Bruce talked about earlier, and you all know, we have mental health practitioners in the jail, substance abuse treatment counselors, and benefit counselors like our own staff member, Chris Garcia. And a lot of times our organizations work together. Somebody might be identified as in need of a particular service. We might find out that they don't have health insurance. They start getting services while they're in the jail. They feel connected to the agencies that are going to provide those services, and we make sure that they have coverage behind them so that when they get out, they don't have to have any kind of interruption in prescriptions or, you know, services and things like that. And so that is really important and has actually, and we've had clients actually tell us that if it wasn't for that, if they hadn't connected with those services in the jail, that they might be dead today or they would be in prison today. And we see that a lot. We also have specialized criminal justice case management and service linkages. We have bond court 7 days a week. That's something that helps reduce people having to stay in the jail. We have evidence-based practices, such as what Bruce talked about. The class that we interrupted was a moral recognition therapy class, MRT, and motivational interviewing, and those things have an important impact. And then also we have CIT-trained officers across law enforcement in this community, and law enforcement officers who are, who learn about mental health and mental health first aid and CIT and so on. And they are very, very important to the fabric of the mental health system and how we work together. So all of those things over the last few years have actually had a really positive impact. And that's just some of what we're hoping to build upon.
Just one more thing really quickly. I don't want to leave you with the impression that somehow the sheriff or the jail staff or Captain Voges has not been responsive to what providers are trying to do in the jail. They are bending over backwards to accommodate these services. It's limitations of the facility that is really the barrier at this point. That's it.
Okay. Thank you so much. This is an incredibly interesting and exciting report, and it provides a plan, which will require a lot of money, but it's a very inspiring plan, and it's a very positive direction. And I learned a lot just from your intercept maps and the data provided. So let me open it up to questions from the board members. Questions or comments? Judy.
On a daily basis, how many staff with this program are in the jail? I tried to figure out how it worked. Are you in and out, or you have so many offices, or?
Go ahead.
We've got hand signals going.
Okay, that's okay.
So we have Rose Krantz, who has how many?
Three.
Okay. Rose Krantz, three in the jail, two with criminal justice, and one with reentry. And then Prairie.
Yeah, one with the criminal justice part, and then we do have drug court staff and also go into the jail to do drug court services.
So Prairie Center has a staff member there, but then they also have drug court staff who work with that. And then Champaign County Healthcare Consumers has one person, Chris Garcia, who is in the jail, and he also sees people when they get out. And then I think the other
and Becky at drug court.
And then I think the other thing that is worth mentioning is that not only has Carrie helped accommodate the staff that we have there, but also she and some of the other staff for the jail actually work very closely with us. She gets involved a lot of times very directly in specific cases. Some of these situations are very intensive and require like a team of us working together. But that sort of gives you that picture. Yeah.
Also, corrections officers who are CIT trained, and that's not as common as you would think. In my conversations across the country, that's not typical.
So, Bruce, now that the report is done, I assume that there are grant applications pending and
there's
others
two.
Planned?
Yes. We did apply for implementation funding through the Justice and Mental Health Collaboration Program, and that would pay for the risk needs responsivity screenings that I talked about, the LSIR. And it would provide some staffing support to transition and maintain that behavioral health and justice coordinating council. And on the reentry side, there's a grant through the Second Chance Act for specialized reentry services for persons with behavioral health co-occurring disorders, right?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And other sources of funding that you're seeking?
Anything we can get.
Okay. So this is where we really encourage community-wide support, not exclusively Mental Health Board, but great.
Tom?
I have two questions, and try to help me understand. If one of the goals is to reduce the amount of incarceration, is that Intercept 1 and Intercept 2, is that the place where that's most likely to divert people from jail?
Intercept 1, basically, because once they're booked into jail, then we would be reducing the time of incarceration in terms of thinking about the sequential intercept map.
In Intercept 2, it's reducing the time that they're...
Right.
So both of them increase the probability of reducing the number of people.
Oh, sure.
In prison,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I have another question. Is First Followers on the committee? Or they didn't respond? Or
First
like,
Followers is on the Reentry Council,
yeah.
But they were not part of the Justice and Mental Health Collaboration, but they were present at some of the public hearings, and the Reentry Council actually conducted the sequential intercept map for the reentry phase. So the Reentry Council was that body that was involved in the sequential intercept map. So they were very involved in the mapping of the reentry intercept.
Because my concern, of course, is with the committee and the surveys, what is the minority representation on that committee, as well as when the surveys that you conducted, what was the minority representation? Since a number of the people who are actually going to be affected, whether this is useful or not, are going to be minority folks. And so I'd like to know whether you're actually talking to them, involving them, and stuff like that.
I'm sorry. SurveyMonkey. So we didn't get demographic information from the respondents for that, and focus groups throughout the community were conducted. I did not take demographic information from the people who attended focus groups, so I can't answer that question specifically.
What's your sense of it, though?
I would say it's a fair representation of the community.
I mean, I'm just thinking about it, and Claudia was there at the public forum, and there was significant representation at the public forum.
We had parents and family members of a lot of people that were actually incarcerated in the jail there to participate as well. So sorry to cut you off.
No, it's fine.
I was just also going to say, in terms of the survey, in our office, when clients would come in and some of our volunteers who are there by virtue of community service and so on, we asked them to help take the survey. So they could sit at the computer or do it by paper, but the survey itself didn't track that. But we tried to definitely find people who had interaction with the criminal justice system.
One more, Julian.
With respect to the council that you're talking about establishing, I was unclear. There was one phrase that said community representative. It was singular. Are you talking about a single person, or are you talking about a more... What I'm concerned about is probably related to what Tom was thinking about. I'm wondering whether or not it's possible to think more concretely about how to establish at the heart of the thing people to represent the constituencies who are being served. Is that part of the plan or not?
Just that's the bullet right above that is advocates, basically. And I think, in my mind anyway, that would fit within that construct. Absolutely, yes. I mean, to ensure that there's broad representation, diverse representation, that makes sense. We wanted to make sure that the primary stakeholders were there who are responsible for managing the jail and the law enforcement response. We wanted to make sure there was citizen representation. There certainly could be more than one. But we're also, wanting to keep it manageable in terms of being able to make decisions and respond in a timely way. But I certainly appreciate the comments as that moves towards implementation, we can certainly ensure that the representation is as broad as possible.
Okay, I'll take that as you. I think you intend it. I think it matters to do it before the beginning, to get people involved right away.
It's a recommendation, so we're not. It's in some respects it'll be transitioning the existing group because some of the folks on there are on the existing group, but it is a remaking of the council to meet this new need. It's a different need from the planning function.
Margaret?
I just want to thank you. It's certainly amazing to get that many people in the room and come forward with expectations, activities, and plans for the future. And it's really awesome. So thank you.
Thank you.
So much. Okay. Moving on, we have this. Page 120 to 127. And this is a decision memorandum. So if I could turn it over to Lynn for a quick overview.
Well, we thought that you were done with the plain old mental health board budget back in July. Mm-hmm. And then you got a higher projected revenue for next year. So the primary adjustment is to put that revenue into the right line, which was property taxes, so that your levy increase is about 4.5% for next year, which is that's a very large increase. So we just went ahead and put the entire difference into contributions and grants, which is where the agency awards sit. I also had made a mistake in the calculation of personnel, and Chris Wilson, our financial manager, came on staff after that and helped me find, by looking back at the last 5 years of actual expenditures, he helped me find places where I hadn't budgeted enough. So we just redistributed that so that the DDB portion is untouched and the main change is in contributions and grants. So then the SILA budget is something you've never had before. That fund has existed as primarily a bank account with PNC, and then a couple of years ago, the old financial person created a couple of spreadsheets to explain what happens with that account. It's primarily for the repairs and maintenance of the two houses that were purchased, and then the mortgage, the payments on the houses, and also mortgage insurance, and there's a collection of rent, and there's also a trust fund in there that's designated for one individual, and he hasn't touched it yet. So that sits in the SILA fund. So this year the county asked us to prepare a budget to represent that. So the auditor's office actually gave me the information that was necessary for this initial fund budget. You'll see that the expected expenditures are lower than revenues. So I think during the spring of 2018 or maybe in the summer, it will be good for both of the boards to talk about this investment. You may be able to afford a third house, which would require an extension on the note, and that's a board action for me to go ask for the extension on the note. It may be that you want to decrease the payments, the $50,000 a year. It may be that you want to pay it off more quickly. Those two would require action, which would involve an attorney. So, and the attorney who arranged the SILA agreements for us has passed away in the last couple of months. So by next spring, we'll see what we've got, and we can look at the fund and do something different. But for now, in order just to manage the existing homes with the revenues that are predicted, this is the budget we've put together.
So, Lynn, if I can clarify, the motion to approve both of these two items is basically fairly routine. We're not making decisions on additional SILAs or paying things off early or anything like that. The decision on the mental health board budget is to reflect the increased revenues that have come in. So this is not a very controversial set of motions, just to clarify. So could I have a motion to approve the first item? Tom? Oh, you're okay. So moved. Okay, so the and a second from Margaret. So the first motion is to approve the attached revised mental health board budget with anticipated revenues and expenditures of $5,020,240. And this would require, Stephanie, a voice vote or not?
Roll call?
Okay. All right. So do you want to go ahead? Any discussion before we call for the vote?
So with the discussion would be, no, we don't want to accept this?
Yeah, that would be about it, yeah. There shouldn't really be much discussion. It's pro forma. Go ahead. But the opportunity is here. Okay, hearing no discussion, Stephanie, if you would call the vote.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Omoasagie?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Margaret White?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes. Okay, do we have a motion for the second budget item related to the SILA fund? Okay, Ann is moving. Is there a second? Joe is seconding. Do I need to read this out loud?
Sure.
For the record? Okay. The motion to approve the draft 2018 SILA fund budget with anticipated revenue of $118,100 and expenditures of $94,194. Payment to this fund was approved with the July 19th, 2017 budget and is consistent with the terms of the intergovernmental agreement between the DD board and the mental health board. Any discussion? Hearing none. Please call the roll.
Yes. Ann Robin?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Joe Omoasagie?
Yes.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes. Okay, great. So then the next item of new business, I believe, is the Mental Health Board three-year plan with the draft FY18 objectives, which are on page 128 to 142.
Well, you know, this says it requires action, but it doesn't. We're really not asking for a decision today.
Great. So it's more for discussion, questions. Or we could also discuss it next week at the study session. So we have a briefing memorandum on the three-year plan, overview of the changes. One of the things that's quite nice that I don't recall in the past was a breakdown on how we were spending money over time. Which is in the attached pages of 132 to 135. We do have time set aside next week in the study session to go through this in more detail, but if there are any comments or questions for tonight, certainly. Tom?
I want to thank you guys for putting this together.
Yeah.
It's incredible, and all the information that's in there. But I must say that I was really surprised when I looked at the amount or the percentage of our awards that actually go to this behavioral health and criminal justice at 48%. It sounds like an awful lot. And the only question that I have about that, of course, is if it made me feel like that in order to get our services, you have to somehow be connected with the criminal justice system. And so we probably need to ask, maybe we do, maybe we don't, maybe we need to ask ourselves by committing so much of our funds in that area, is there something that we're overlooking and not doing now that's also of community interests? Then the second thing that I was just so really impressed with was what's on page, I guess it's page 134, the breakdown of agencies, programs, and our award, and the percentage of our award to these agency programs. Because I know that it's in our summary, but as individual, now I got to see it as the full package, and it made a startling impact on me. And first of all, it allowed me to know that we are not the sole provider of all these programs, that they are getting funds from other places. And that was very encouraging to see, and I hope that we can keep that up with our agencies that we're working with, that we're not that we may be the provider of last resort, but not the only provider for them. So whoever put that chart together, was pretty encouraging, very encouraging. But the other, just a comment about that 48% looms big when I look at it. It's almost like on a TV screen, it keeps flashing.
So Tom, without going into a whole lot of, we actually talked about some of that yesterday, and I think next week when you have the study session, the topics that we were on would be really great to cover. But just to note that some of that 48% are the very things that we heard about tonight. So not all of the services to people who are in jail or coming out of jail are funded by the Mental Health Board, but most of them are. So, you know, and that was why it was nice to have Tracy's comments at the beginning of the meeting, because some of the things the coalition is getting a lot of really positive attention for are funded by the Mental Health Board. And I don't think that people really know that, because you don't have a brand like United Way, and we don't spend a lot of time advertising. Mm-hmm. I think I personally would be uncomfortable with that, since this is a taxing body. But it's nice to see the good results are coming back. I just want to make sure that you know that your investments are responsible for a lot of these good results. The other comment I wanted to share is that when we used to, just a few years ago, we would look at these proportions of funding from other sources as a healthy measure. We don't anymore. If you've got 90% of your funding from the state, we worry about you. So, you know, the meaning of this type of chart changed a lot in the last few years, and we're not out of the woods yet with changes at the state and federal levels. And I, you know, some of those things will be answered by the end of this month, but certainly not everything, and not even close to answers on the state-related problems. So you're right, this is good to keep an eye on, but often what it says to us is not, you know, not what it used to mean, not always happy, so.
I would like to say we used to have to dig for this data, and it is so nice, as Tom said, to have it all laid out so straightforward and in a able to view it on one page, actually five pages, but to see also the changes across time or the trends across time. So it should make planning for next year a bit clearer, or at least we'll have a foundation from which to plan that we understand. So thank you. Okay, moving on then to old business. We have a decision memorandum on the Rosecrans match amendment that we discussed back in July. It's on page 143 to 144. And this is the issue in which there are two parts to the motion. One was to approve the use of unexpended local matching funds, and the other was to approve extending the term of the contract to November 30th. So have you all had a chance to read the decision memorandum? Okay. Then I think we probably could move directly to the two motions. Do I have, and I would prefer if someone else would read the motion, do I have someone who would like to present the first motion? Elaine? Go ahead and read it, and then we'll get a second.
I move to approve Rosecrans's request to use unexpended JMHCP local matching funds in the amount of $11,894 for previously incurred expenses associated with writing two federal grant applications and other program costs related to the JMHCP planning grant, so long as the balance of unexpended funds of $5,838 is sufficient to meet remaining match obligations.
Is there a second? Okay. Discussion? Anne?
I don't really understand what this means, but...
Could you go into more detail, Lynn?
Well, I might ask Mark to do this. It's pretty unusual. This is a question that we were talking about earlier today was your own funds, according to your funding guidelines, can't be used in the activities of applying for your funds. But this is different. This is a very special case, and there is precedent. The Mental Health Board has funded those activities of grant writing on behalf of the whole community. It's been federal grants, typically. So, and we brought a version of this to you in July, but we were neutral on the recommendation. At this point, we feel good about it because other funding offsets it. And right, and do you want to?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
The original request that came in July was a little bit higher, and the county has requested a budget modification. I'm not sure that's exactly how it's described, but it increased going forward from the day, I think mid-May, the amount of money that could be paid out of the federal grant, and it continues to include our match, but it reduced the amount that was being requested from us to pay other costs. That basically there were costs that were being incurred that weren't being billed to the federal grant that could be billed. So it reduced. So now those costs are being billed to the federal grant, and they will be billed through September 30th. There is the potential for a two-month extension, so those costs would continue to be paid through November if the extension is granted, and I believe the extension has been granted. So you end up with the remaining $11,894. Of that, $5,838 is tied to the match or to pay other obligations. And then you have grant writing expenses, and we just heard the presentation about the JMHCP planning grant, or about the planning grant, but they, as part of the process last spring, they wrote the implementation grant, but that wasn't billable. Similar to what Lynn was saying, you can't use our money to write applications to us. The feds don't allow for you to use their money to write grants to them. So that was an additional expense that was incurred, but there was no source of paying for it. They also wrote the Second Chance Act that was also mentioned. So they're asking us to pay the cost for writing those two grants.
Okay, well, the way I understand this is that we're not giving them any more money. We're just authorizing them to use the money that we already gave them,
yes.
Which they were not able to use all of it, but now they have a way of using all of it. Is that
yes.
right?
Yes, and yes.
But we have to authorize them to do that, yes, because it isn't exactly what we told them to do with to start out with.
Correct.
Okay, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I think I got it now.
Yeah, I got it too. That was much better than what I just said.
You know too much. See, that's the problem. I move to approve extending the term of the fiscal year 17 criminal justice contract term to November 30th, 2017, contingent on Department of Justice extension of the federal award, which we think has been done.
Before she, do we not have any financial to approve? We do or we don't?
We do.
No. We're not done then.
Yeah, there are two more options. Thank you, Stephanie. So we are moving expeditiously through the meeting, and one thing that is different is that we've reversed new business and old business. So under old business, we invite the agencies to present not to exceed 5 minutes, important information, and then we'll move on and approve minutes and expenditures, et cetera. Thank you, Gail.
I'll make this really quick because I know you're ready to get out of here. Just in case you did miss the information that was in the newspaper, Prairie Center is in due diligence discussions right now with Rosecrans out of Rockford, and we also know Rosecrans CU exists locally. We are hoping to meet a January 1st deadline, which is really crunch time for us, and also the same time, or very close to the same time, as you know, that we'll be starting on applications for funding. So we're busily trying to get that all done, and we're really just in the due diligence phase right now, but wanted to let everyone know in case you had missed it. So thanks.
Any other agency? We've kind of dwindled in size, so I'm guessing not. Okay. Lynn, is there anything about the Developmental Disability Board that needs to be presented?
Sure. I can do it quick.
Quick, okay.
They met this morning and had roughly the same business that you do. They meet again October 25th.
And then we have the approval of the Mental Health Board minutes from July 19th, 2017. I assume that everyone's had a chance to look at the minutes and would invite a motion for approval. Thank you, Tom. Is there a second? Thank you very much, Judy. Discussion?
These are on page 149. Hearing none, all those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Okay, passed. Lynn, do you have some executive director's comments?
I'm so happy that we flipped the agenda. So at this point, the cost of rambling is high. It's been 2 months since we met, and we've been really busy with a whole bunch of activities. We've got a new reporting system in place for all the DD contracts. It'll tell us more about what kind of services people are getting. And hopefully that will help us fill gaps better, because we know there are service gaps, but we just don't know how big they are. So this is an important project, and it's been very tough for the agencies and for our staff, and they're really in there. We're also starting to talk about a community needs assessment process. This time we would like it to involve a really robust survey of individuals and family members and providers, and so we're working through that. We've had a couple staff meetings about it already, and we're looking into some new things. We've relied on public hearings in the past, but those they're very hard to organize and sort of expensive, and then you end up with often the same people that you already get robust input from, so that's another thing we're working on. We got some accessibility reviews of our public websites, and two of them failed miserably, so I'm working on. I did some of the repairs myself. Some of it is out of my control. It's code stuff that I don't understand. So we're working on that, too. We have, because the expo is going to be in April this year for the first time ever, we don't want October to pass without people understanding what's going on. So the expo committee has created a little festival for October at Lincoln Square. There are some flyers about it. It's really focused on artists and music and hopefully information. Like, we hope to have some postcards about the consumer survey and maybe other paper information, and take advantage of the farmers market traffic. And it's also on the same day as the expungement fair. So we're hoping for some, you know, just a nice reminder that the expo is still coming. It's just coming in April. And I don't know, something might have slipped my mind that we've been working on, but there's time. We'll get it next time. The board packet for the study session was really fun to put together. Mark and I have been working on that all the way up until this afternoon, and it was really exciting. Another thing that was really fun to do was business cards, because after our organizational assessment, no one had the same job title as last year, and some people were new to the office, and some people's jobs were just so different. So we got business cards for you, too. When we ordered small quantities of business cards for ourselves, we got you some. And your business cards, unlike ours, are magic, and they have a chip inside of them. So if you have a smartphone, or if you're talking to somebody and they say, well, what do you guys fund and what are some of your policies, you can say, here, if you have a smartphone that's not an iPhone, you just go like this, and it takes you to the website. But because everybody has iPhones, which won't do it yet, the website is listed. So that's actually better. And these are the art on these cards was created by a local artist who has disabilities, and we purchased the rights to use these two photographs, and he was really excited. So I brought them for you to, you take as many as you like. They don't have your names on them, so that you can distribute them as you like.
Thank you, Lynn.
That was really fun.
Yeah.
Okay. And I did ramble. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
These are the instructions. Our new financial manager, who will probably not be able to attend evening meetings, he has a little kid. He met with Mike Smith, who's a DD board member, who also a CPA, and they talked about what kind of information might be valuable to the boards, and they came up with this. This is a statement that Chris can provide each quarter. Yeah, he'll provide this kind of statement each quarter to update you on activities. Chris also got into our online financial system and made 3 improvements, and then we made it so that if you want to, when you go into that application system, if you use that to look at applications, you can also look at all the financial activities in the same place.
Thank you. Is the expenditure approval list, which is page 175 to 189, I guess, which is the list of expenditures conducted by the board over the last 2 months?
It must be,
yeah. Or 3 months. Again, I'm assuming everyone's had a chance to look through it. If I could have a motion to approve the expenditures. Ann?
I move to approve the expenditures as in the report.
Okay. Thank you, Judy, for seconding. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? I think the ayes carry it. I'm going to suggest that we hold on the board-to-board reports for the next meeting because we have come close to running out of time, unless there's something that is very critical that a member wants to share. I know that people are going to other board meetings, and that's much appreciated. I don't think we have any particular board announcements other than the study session next week, and if I could get just a show of hands for those who think they can be at the study session. Great. Okay, this will be pretty important for future planning. And if you can't, please feel free to call a board member or call me with your input, and we can share it at the study session. Again, it's a study session, so there won't be decisions made, but it gives us a chance to go more in depth into the data that Mark has pulled together. Is there a movement to adjourn? Tom? And it looks like Julian just raised his hand a second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you so much.